Welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast. We are so excited that you have joined us today. As always, I am sitting here with our illustrious leader, Tim Elmore. Tim, thanks for being here.
Andrew, great to be here.
Hey, I am really excited today, Tim, because we're having a conversation about a subject I'm deeply interested in, and I think that us at Growing Leaders are talking about a lot because of how much it affects the people who we love to work with, educators, yeah. and anybody who's working with the next generation. And that subject is technology and the future, and how are all these things changing? How do we adjust our sales in order to really handle technology well, but still hold on to some of the things that we think are timeless? So I wonder if you could talk about this subject. You call it the ancient future, and I wonder if you could explain, when it comes to this subject, why do you use that term, the ancient future?
Yeah, I actually love this term. I'm not the first one to use it. I've heard a few use it over the years, but the ancient future is a term that describes the need for students to be connected to their heritage, to some virtues and values from the ancient world that have just been always good for mankind. But then the future is obviously we're peering into a world of the unknown that is full of technology and hope and inventions and hopefully discoveries of cures for cancer and HIV. So we need to look backward and forward. And I've found that whether it's a teacher that goes, oh my gosh, where's technology taking us? Do we need to just throw these devices away? No. We need the tablets for our schoolroom. I hear parents wondering, is their son only going to be good at video games and not have any real life skills for employment later? I hear athletic coaches, we did yesterday, in a D1 program, say, I wonder if they should just throw their phones away.
Yeah.
But Andrew, you're a millennial. You recognize the future is going to require technology and some of these new discoveries we're making.
So true. It's so true. And for me, just for explanation's sake, I'd love for you to get into this. When you use the term ancient future, the future word makes all the sense in the world to me, and I think probably makes a lot of sense to our listeners, right? We're talking about social media. We're talking about technology, both in and outside of the classroom. We're talking about new trends like gamification and project-based learning and some of those things, especially in the educational institutions. But I wonder if you could just talk really briefly about what do we mean when we say the ancient part? What about our past are we holding on to and saying, this is great? How do we kind of balance that?
Yeah, one metaphor I've enjoyed using, and I think I've probably even used it on this podcast before, is in centuries ago, in ancient times, there were plumb lines that would enable, let's say, a fisherman to, drop that cable or that string into the water with a rock on the other side of it,
yeah.
and it plumbed the depths of the ocean to see how deep it was. But you could also hold a plumb line next to a wall or a building, and it would show you if the building was crooked. I think in many ways we need to find those plumb lines to say, wait a minute, we've drifted from the original intent of this college or this classroom or this course or my home. Maybe I'm leading a home and my kids are so, they're on technology 8 hours a day, and we're asking ourselves, is that good? A plumb line is simply a standard of measurement where we can say, we're off course now. We need to get back to what we were. And I think that is where we look at some timeless principles, values, virtues, and truths that are timeless. I'm not just saying a secluded population, but we say that is needed for civilization to move forward into the future.
That's great. How do we, this is a question a lot of us are asking, I think, because I see this happening everywhere, but how do you figure out what those things are? I mean, is it our culture agreeing on them? Is it a set of things that we see, hey, these are working? I know one way that you word this is we need to be timely and timeless. Yeah. So I wonder if you could talk about that in the context of figuring out what are those timeless values.
When I meet with students, whether they're middle school, high school, or college students, they're almost always saying, I wish my teacher got me. And by got me, it's got technology in many ways. So it's the use of social media for this course or the use of an app, perhaps, that could be used. And the teacher's going, oh my gosh, that's going to be gone in 5 years and we'll be on to something else. So timely and timeless are two very critical things, I think, for teachers today. We're in a very rapidly changing world. Nobody would argue that. Things are changing very, very fast. So to be timely is to be current. I need, as an educator, a parent, a coach, a leader, to be very current with what's happening in culture and in technology. At the same time, I need to marry the timeless truths that come out of a context that maybe the students wouldn't even know. Mm. Maybe they don't realize how we got here today. And so somebody needs to be up front and say, I'm gonna offer that. So timely and timeless are should be, I believe, the aim of every instructor, every leader, every educator, that they're both up with culture and yet they have the timeless truths. Now, one habitude.
That's great.
One of the habitudes that we love talking about here in the office, you know this, is bottled water. We've talked about this before. A bottle of water is an illustration of both the timely and the timeless. The water inside the bottle is timeless. All countries and civilizations have always needed water down through history. We need water to live. The bottle we pour it from, or the container we pour it from, is timely. Okay, today we see a Dasani or an Evian or whatever. It's a brand that's around today. It wasn't around in ancient Egypt 4,000 years ago. So what we're pouring out to the students needs to be timeless, but it needs to be coming from a container that's timely, or that they would go, oh, I get that. That's my world. You understand my world.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. You know, as we're thinking about this, it reminds me even of a conversation that you and I were a part of yesterday. We're at this D1 school, and a coach kind of raises his hand and says, I don't understand why I need to know about the phones and the technology and all those things. And I think from his point of view, we've been winning games long before these cell phones came along. And I feel like that's very much where we are, especially in the world of education and coaching and some of these places where people are wrestling with specifically technology. Yeah. How do I bring it into the classroom? When do I bring it into the classroom? How do I bring it onto the field? And when do I bring it onto the field? I know that there are schools like out in California and Silicon Valley where they're using no technology, right? Whereas there are schools even here in Atlanta that have fully immersed in technology. Yeah. You know, we got iPads and laptop carts and all your assignments are done on the computer and all those kinds of things. So I feel like technology is coming right at us.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
So how do you, if you're having a conversation with a parent or a teacher or a coach, like how do you make suggestions for the way that they use technology in a good way versus, you know, figuring out what do we throw out and how do we not throw out the baby with the bathwater when it comes to that?
Sure, it's a great question, and I think it's one being asked all over the country, perhaps around the world. A phrase I've always used that I've bought into is technology, I think, is meant to be a guide, not a god. So some kids, we'd say, you know what? It's controlling your life. It's a god. You know, it's 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
The equivalent of a full-time job you're spending in front of a video game or a smartphone or a tablet. But when it's a guide, that means we harness it, we leverage it to take us somewhere that we need to go. Certainly our children are going to be going into a world where probably even more technology will be a part of their lives. So we can't just rip it away for good and say, I hope to God you make it in the future. I think that would not make them relevant to the world they're going into. If we care at all about mixing it up with the world and being change agents, we've got to know technology. So two words that come to my mind that are really helpful.
Okay.
I think as we parent, teach, as professors, as coaches, as leaders, we need to provide context and creativity. Now, by context, what I mean is context enables the student to understand what's gone before and why. So we're giving context to this thing we're talking about here. But the history teacher would totally understand this. So I'm going to talk about World War II and World War I because it got us where we are today in Germany and so forth and so on. So I think we need to provide context that the student really needs. In fact, I've said this before. I think what students have today is a lot of content without context.
Mm.
You know, they got loads of YouTube videos in their head.
Absolutely.
But maybe they never really experienced what that YouTube video is about. So context is very critical. Can we marry current events with history showing how they connect?
Mm.
But at the same time, creativity. Sometimes we marry context and we say, well, I'm going to give you the history behind this thing. Creativity is what students are longing for. This enables them the liberty to develop new thoughts and ideas, and fosters an environment that encourages them to think progressively. In fact, it's funny, in these days that we're in right now, I often call myself a conservative progressive, which people usually tilt their head like a dog at a new dish bowl and say, what is that?
Yeah.
But I'm conservative in knowing we cannot lose sight of the timeless things that have brought civilization to where it's brought us to. But we got to be progressive in how we're delivering it. So maybe the pedagogy we're always rethinking, but perhaps the content we need to always be evaluating. Is that timeless? If it is, keep it. Don't scrap it because it wasn't popular with the 6-second attention span of the freshman and high school student.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. It seems, and so many of the people who are listening right now, I'm sure know, it is such a balancing act between those two things. And I'd love to bring up this subject because I feel like this is a conversation that's happening a lot. When you've got kids in a classroom, whether that be college or whatever, who have a device in their pocket that can literally access all of human knowledge, mm-hmm. right? When it comes to this context and creativity, what's the responsibility? Where do you see it going between a student needing to know all those facts and figures versus maybe just needing to know how to get to those facts and figures? So so I just wonder about the balance there. It's something that I've had a conversation a lot about with my friends where we're asking, does it even matter that the kid knows what all happened in the War of 1812 when they can look it up? Mm-hmm. How do you balance that? Like, do our kids actually need to memorize dates and facts and figures and all those things?
Yeah, it's a great question. And actually, it's one that I'm hearing from faculty members all the time. When I was growing up back in the day, I climbed off my dinosaur and I went to school. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. Back in the day, memory was king. The kid with the greatest memory got the best grades. You just memorize. And so it wasn't necessarily learning, it was memory. Memory's good, but I don't know that really taught us who was going to succeed in life. In fact, I think quite the opposite. We've learned now presidents of companies were often C-plus students, you know, and the A students were working for that C-plus student.
And plenty of business creators, entrepreneurs never finished college.
That's right. So while I'm not against memory, I think there's a real need to develop the muscle memory. It's different than it was. So I believe while memory was king before, resourcefulness needs to be king now. And by resourcefulness, I mean the skill that we develop in students where I can find answers quickly. I can hunt, and sometimes that means Google. It does. But if I've got a young graduate that is resourceful, I've got some, that's a timeless skill. Now, whatever the search engine looks like in 2025 or 2035, I can find answers. So that employer or that spouse or whatever the need is, needs an answer. Maybe I don't have it memorized, but I can very rapidly within 30 seconds retrieve that answer, synthesize what's needed. So I think resourcefulness is the new king. And I think resilience is king. And here's why. Because our world demands that we reinvent ourselves so often. You know, it might not just be that I got 5 jobs in my career. I might have 5 careers in my career. So if I'm resilient and I can bounce back and get back up and do it again, oh my gosh, what employer, what spouse, what friend, what coach would not want someone with resilience and resourcefulness? So I'm saying teachers, let's push for this. Parents, let's push for these skill sets in our kids.
Yeah, those definitely feel like essentials that have been core for me in my short career in my 20s. I'm feeling like both of those things were incredibly essential to me. So I'm interested in talking. We've talked kind of about the what, but I want to talk a little bit about the how. One really popular term is gamification right now.
Yeah.
And I know it's something we're talking about at Growing Leaders, but I wonder if you could just explain, what is gamification? How do you think it's being used? How should it be used? Some of those things.
Yeah. Well, we are looking at it because we believe there are some timeless truths and skills that can be taught through a methodology that so many millions of this emerging generation totally embrace, much more than the talking head in front of social studies, you know, or math class. So the gamification, I think, does a few things. One, it allows a user, a student, to compete or collaborate, which is kind of fun. So I'm either in community or I'm competing, and that just that both of those almost meet everybody's needs, you know, that sort
absolutely.
Of thing. It allows us or whoever to put content that needs to be learned, but done through visuals, done through interaction. I believe interaction and community is what they long for. So we're teaching the timeless thing, but it's in a way that they just love to learn, like they might have collaborating with a friend on Warcraft or whatever it was. So there are some, if I can say it this way, pedagogy, methodology, you know, some pedagogy that kids will buy into, but allows us to say the very thing that probably was taught 100 years ago, just in a lecture and a drill and a test.
That's great. That's great. I've sincerely enjoyed being a part of utilizing that gamification trend here with our launch of Habitudes Play that just came out. We're really excited about that. So far, we've really been talking about, when it comes to the ancient future, the technology part of the future. But I wonder specifically on the subject of pedagogy, what are some things that you have seen? So I'm talking maybe K-12 and higher education, some different trends that you're seeing in education that are really kind of pushing the boundaries and getting towards maybe a positive look at this ancient future we've been talking about.
Yeah, so this is really cool. Both higher ed and K-12, and for that matter, some really good parents in their home, good coaches on an athletic team, have been able to marry this ancient future idea where there's some timeless stuff and some timely stuff. The timely is going to be intriguing. The timeless is what you really need. It's like ice cream and broccoli. You want the ice cream, but you really need the broccoli. So let me give some just higher ed illustrations real quick, and then we'll jump into some K-12 and maybe even some stuff you could do at the house. It should not surprise us that Stanford University has had some great conversations about this very topic, about where we need to go and how do we not lose what we most need in terms of skill sets. So one example would be what Stanford has called, commonly called, the Open Loop University. And I love this. This idea imagines the college experience as a series of loops over a lifetime. This plan would admit students at 18, like we normally do, but then give 6 years of access to residential and learning opportunities to use any time in their life. So you're not limited to 18 to 22 or 18 to 24. You might come back at 30. In fact, it would allow alumni to return mid-career for professional development and new students to get real-life work experience right away, which we really need.
Yeah.
Here's another one, paced education. This is kind of a second cousin to the first, but this abolishes the class year, meaning freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, and replaces it with adaptive, personalized learning that allows students to move through phases of learning at their own pace, almost like homeschool and classroom, you know, married together. The goal is to help students make better choices about what they want to study and understand their own learning style. And you never learn better when you own what you're studying. The third one is commonly called the AXIS flip, A-X-I-S, the AXIS flip. And this is interesting. Again, it's a distant family member of the first two. Rather than traditional academic disciplines like nursing or business, the curriculum would be organized around common and transferable skills that could be used over the course of a lifetime. Schools and departments would be reorganized around competency hubs, so that there would be deans of scientific analysis, let's say, or quantitative reasoning, or moral and ethical reasoning, communication effectiveness, and others. So you might have a class from typically the business school, the nursing school, the theology, you know, and this and that, and you merit together, and you have a skill set that you can use in whatever industry, even if you change industries.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's very cool.
And then a fourth one, this might be my favorite, is called purpose learning. And in this situation, instead of majors, students would declare a mission to help them find meaning and purpose behind their studies. This moves the emphasis in college from choosing a major, and then, of course, changing it three or four times, to choosing a problem to solve. I love this. Choosing a problem that they want to solve. And then intrigued with the world problem, students remain engaged and seek to gain tools to create a solution. Again, might be from various departments typically set up today. So again, this is just some ways that I think our world is moving and how a teacher might be able to do things just a little different to make sure that they're moving forward progressively. There's a future, but we haven't lost the ancient stuff we need to hold on to.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Now in K-12, you and I both have heard great innovative teachers that even in a traditional middle school or high school, might use project-based learning, where instead of the lecture being the basis for the classroom, it's a project they're working on, and every comment that's made from the faculty member is helping them build that project or perform that project. Problem-based learning, same kind of concept, but you start with a why, not the what, and you start with a problem that they need to solve, much less like we just talked about with purpose learning. I just feel like students don't engage when they really don't understand the why. So these are ways that even in a traditional school, you could tweak the class, or at least a week or two of the class where the students really get engaged and they're willing to take the journey with you from this point on. Then, if someone's listening who said, I'm a parent, I'm not a teacher, how do I do this in my home? I think there's loads of ways we can do this, even in our home environment. For instance, when I was raising my two kids, they're both adults now, but I would always try to think through what are the timeless skill sets or qualities I want them to have, and leverage those for whatever they were engaged in. So Jonathan was into video games, movies. He loved movies. So every time we went to see a movie, we'd go to Starbucks afterwards or somewhere, get a Coke or a coffee, and we would talk about the plot and the worldview of the characters and why did the main character do this and what was the problem he was trying to solve and what was the conflict. And even at 5, 6, 7 years old, we'd be seeing Disney movies, but we'd be talking about worldview. And they learn critical thinking from those exercises. So that's just one example, but I feel like what we need to do is be thinking, what's the ancient stuff we don't want to lose? And then what's some future things they're engaged in that might be a way to teach it? That's really the bottom line.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. I do feel like so many of these schools and all these different people, they hear technology as the future, and they think the solution to that is I'm going to buy an iPad and give it to a kid in a classroom. But what you're talking about is asking a deeper question of how has technology changed our world and shaping our education and thinking in order to match that. And I love that. I love that idea. Just to wrap up here, any final advice? I know you talked about context and creativity. Yeah. You talked about resourcefulness and resilience. Mm-hmm. But for our listener out there who's saying, okay, how do I get started? What's maybe some advice that you could give?
Andrew, I think the temptation for at least people like me is just to be trendy. We just want to make sure the students stay with us and they like us at the end of the school year and they vote on us or whatever. And I think it's not just trendy. In fact, I did a blog post last fall that was really fun. I met some students, and they were college students, and I found out what courses they were taking, and they were taking some very, very interesting courses. In fact, I scribbled down what they were taking. One was called Getting Dressed. Yes, it was, Getting Dressed.
Learned that yet.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that course, that's a freshman course.
Yeah.
What if Harry Potter was real? And so that got me thinking, maybe these higher ed institutions are doing some more very interesting classes than just math, history, et cetera, et cetera. Well, sure enough, all over the country, from East Coast to West Coast, philosophy and Star Trek is being now introduced at Georgetown University. Arguing with Judge Judy.
Wow.
That's a course, yep, at UC Berkeley. How to Watch Television, God, Sex, and Chocolate. And while I giggle at those, my first thought really was, where were those classes when I was going to school?
Yeah, absolutely.
But then I'm thinking, okay, either this professor has just decided to go trendy. Let's just dumb this thing down and just have some fun, and I'll get a bunch of students in my class, and I'll have job security. I'm hoping that's not it. I'm trusting that's not it. I'm hoping that they've simply teased them with a very popular, culturally trendy topic, and they're truly teaching the timeless virtues of critical thinking true learning. We can only hope. But so my warning to listeners is, don't just be trendy. Don't just be traditional. I think transformation takes place when we, again, it's ancient future. We look back at the past, hold the plumb line up and say, there's a straight wall. Let's keep that straight wall. How can we deliver it in a way that's just going to be so engaging to students that they take this into the 21st century?
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Tim, for taking the time think about these things and also tell us about these things. Again, that was Dr. Tim Elmore. I'm Andrew McPeak. If you enjoyed this podcast, this conversation, we'd love to have you continue to be a part of these kinds of conversations. The first way that we know you can do that is to join us this year, June 23rd and 24th, for our National Leadership Forum. If you're interested in being a part of conversations about the next generation, education, some of the topics that we've brought up here today on this podcast, we'd love for you to join us. So you can find out more information by going to growingleaders.com. NLF. That stands for National Leadership Forum. So /NLF. We'd love to have you come and be a part of that conversation in Atlanta. If you're interested in hearing more, every single week, Tim writes a really, really fantastic blog. You can find out more about that at growingleaders.com. We'd love to have you be a part of those conversations. Thank you so much for listening in, and we'll see you next time.